Good morning, everyone. Thanks for joining us for today's episode of Everything is Interesting. I'm Kira Lindenberg.
And I'm, oh gosh, can't talk. And I'm Kira Klingenberg. Super excited to be here, guys. And with us, as always in studio, is everyone's favorite Jefferson, but probably not the only Jefferson.
No, there's others.
It's Jefferson Smith.
He's my favorite.
Hi.
Hi. How's it going?
I heard that we were going to talk about something really fun today.
We are.
And punny.
Yeah. It's in honor of you because you're a guy and you're fun. So today we're going to talk about fungi.
I just want you to know that joke is in there because we wrote this whole script and I was like, how did we not put a fungi joke in here?
Wow. Because I'm a fun guy.
That's right. It's all for you. It's in honor of you.
I'll accept the compliment.
So, you know what? Actually, if I remember correctly, I think our mutual love for fungi is what made Kira and I realize that we had to be friends forever.
Is that, I was thinking it was primarily the fact that you have the same name.
No, not really.
No. That was more of just like an added bonus.
That's weird. But you love fungi.
I am very excited about fungi.
Cool.
Good.
Well, today we've prepared some fun facts about fungi.
Woo!
But as much as we love them, we are not experts. So we had some help from Dr. Anne Rasmussen, a real live mycologist.
Ooh.
That's a fancy name for someone who studies fungi.
Fancy.
Hi, I'm Anne Rasmussen. Last year I earned my doctorate in biology from the University of Mississippi, and I studied the response of a group of symbiotic mushrooms to forest restoration treatments.
Anne works for Oregon State University and had a lot to tell us about all kinds of fungi.
Fungi come in a huge assortment of shapes, sizes, colors, and textures. The fungi kingdom includes 99,000 known species and an estimated 50,000 undiscovered species.
They are everywhere, guys! The yeast that makes your beer, the molds and mildews growing in your basement, and the penicillin that saved your life, those are all fungi.
Except for the penicillin. That's gross.
The penicillin is gross?
No.
Oh.
That's the thing that isn't gross. Mold.
Mildew. I was like, man, look, a gift horse.
Well, yeah, maybe you feel that way right now.
Yeast, sometimes gross, sometimes not.
Sometimes, right, a little of both. But wait until you find out how cool fungi are.
All
Jefferson.
Right. Okay, let's take it away with fungi fun fact number one. There we go. The largest living thing on Earth.
I'd like to pause for a very short clip. Wait a minute. Hold on, everybody. Let's play it again. Okay, there we go.
Excuse me, that was really important. We had to power up before we could find out the next fact. The largest living thing on Earth may very well be a fungi.
Okay, I've heard this. I'm not sure where. I'm also not sure I buy it. It seems like it would be hard to measure. I saw a blue whale at the Natural History Museum. It was very big. It took up, I don't remember if it took a whole room or it took up more than a room. The new biggest dinosaur, now they had to put in, I think it's Natural History Museum also, and that has all the stuff. And also some stuff that's not that fun, but they have a lot of the stuff. And the neck of the biggest dinosaur stretched into the next room.
Oh my gosh.
I've never seen a fungi that needed two rooms in the Natural History Museum.
Oh, but it beats that whale and that dinosaur neck by a lot. Like, the blue whale may take up a whole room, the dinosaur may take up two, but this fungus likely spans, get this, an area of 4 square miles.
It's a big museum.
Yeah. It is known as the honey fungus.
Gross.
A mushroom is actually the largest known living organism by some measures. There's a fungus in eastern Oregon that's a honey mushroom that, because it's below ground, it's really hard to prove that it's all, you know, connect them, but it's all like genetically seems to be the same organism. You can visit it. It's actually an edible fungus. So if you're confident in your mushroom identification skills, you can eat part of the largest living organism on Earth.
And where is it? It's in eastern Oregon?
Yeah, in our backyard.
Well, depending on which way your house is.
I have a big backyard.
But and because it's the biggest thing, I could eat it. It probably won't notice.
It will. Okay. Paul Stamets thinks that mushrooms are sentient. They know that you're there, that you're like walking eating them. Paul Stamets, he's like, you know, the godfather of all things mushroom. We'll get there. Don't worry about it.
Why isn't this a big tourist attraction? That we have the biggest fun, the biggest fun guy, the most fun guy in the world is in Eastern Oregon. Why aren't there lines? Why isn't there somebody serving salt and straw and a lot and some of the fun guy?
Well, you can't really see it.
Oh.
Yeah. But it's there and it's old. So it's a multi-celled fungus, obviously, because it's huge. And it's estimated to be, you know, between 2,400 and 8,600 years old. But, like, most of its body is underground.
Yeah, like a lot of fungi. So the parts of the fungi that we see above ground, the ones that we know as, like, cute little mushrooms, they are only a tiny portion of a much larger organism that lives below the soil.
So the giant fungi is there. We just can't see it. What if I dig real deep?
Well, you probably wouldn't find much, because underground, the main body of the fungus consists of, like, these long, delicate, thread-like structures called hyphae, which can be invisible to the naked eye.
Oh, so that barely counts.
Yeah, well, but they...
like a blue whale. Yeah. They're like little threads. I don't know.
Yeah, well, but we're all made of tiny microscopic cells, right? Just get enough of them together.
It doesn't count, does it? Because you can't see it, Jefferson? I see how it is. Just stop.
So when the hyphae... You're a non-air believer.
Now you understand my worldview. I've already forgotten the segment we did on gas.
Right. So anyway, when these hyphae get together, they form these thick patches known as mycelium.
And the mycelium connect and branch and reconnect endlessly, rapidly passing messages, water, oxygen, and other nutrients along the chain through small holes in their connecting walls.
And this networking behavior kind of mirrors the internet.
Cool.
Which brings us to fungi fun fact number two. Yes. Thank you.
Fungi help trees talk to each other.
Okay. My response is trees can't talk.
Oh, okay. Maybe we should have said communicate. That might be a better word. But they do it, and they couldn't do it without the fungi living on and around their roots.
I would just like to point out that trees actually might be able to talk. Maybe we just don't speak their language. I hate that we assume that everything... We're so human-centric. Anyway, see, a tree just can't hand nutrients or messages
it's
to...
It's like the absurdity of political correctness. It has to also include trees and fungi. Keep going.
Yes,
I'm on your
does.
Side.
In our okay. world, yes. Yeah.
So, anyway, trees can't just, like, hand messages to their neighboring trees because, you know, they're kind of stuck in one place. But the fungi, with all its interconnected web of mycelium, can.
And the trees have this little something that the fungi don't. Sugar.
So a symbiotic relationship has emerged between the two. The tree roots and the fungi form underground units called mycorrhizae, which basically look like root extensions.
And the roots of the mycorrhizae do a sort of exchange. The trees get water and nutrients from the fungi, and the fungi gets the sugar from the tree.
Overall, the concept is called common mycorrhizal networks. So one fungus can be connected to a whole bunch of trees, like maybe a dozen. And there's different patterns where, you know, some fungi only associate with certain groups of trees. A lot of them are more general and can associate with trees from different families.
Thanks, Dr. Ann. The trees also use this mycelium network for a kind of communication, as they now have a way to send signals back and forth. So Paul Stamets, who we were talking about earlier and is the godfather of all fungi knowledge, calls this far-reaching tree fungal network the Wood Wide Web, which gives you a nice mental image of how the system works.
Essentially, the trees send stored nutrients to neighboring trees down through the mycorrhizal network, connecting their roots, and the fungi delivers.
Yeah, it's pretty far out, but it's true.
Researchers actually found this out by injecting a tree with a traceable kind of carbon, and later found this exact same carbon in a neighboring tree. The only way it could have gotten there is through the mycorrhizal network of the fungus that connected them.
And we're not exactly sure why certain nutrients get sent to certain individuals, but there is compelling evidence of trees helping each other in times of stress. So, like in the winter, evergreen trees may send sugars to those trees who have lost their leaves and can't photosynthesize.
Also, mature trees often send nutrients to younger, developing saplings of the same species to help them grow.
And researchers have seen ponderosa pines produce bug-repelling chemicals when it was really their Douglas fir neighbors that were infested with budworms. And that suggests that the firs were sending a warning signal to the ponderosa pines through the mycorrhizal network.
Crazy. We don't really know yet if the trees are giving the fungus instructions, like, you know, customers talking to a bank teller, or if it's just totally random. But it definitely does make you wonder about how much we really know about the conscious awareness of things that you can't see and that don't have voices, Jefferson.
And how to be politically correct about them. Mm.
So I have a few thoughts. One is that I'm a more fun guy when I eat sugar for a little while, and then I am less of a fun guy. Also, mycorrhizal sounds like a not-yet-launched pharmaceutical that I think will be coming to a TV ad near you.
Yeah,
and
too.
Also, so you're saying that fungi might indeed have a sophisticated communication system that is essentially the internet for trees – Why does fungi think it's people?
Well, it kind of makes sense that fungi thinks it's people because, genetically speaking...
Cue fungi fact number three!
You guys are getting so good at this timing thing. Number three, fungi are actually more closely related to us humans than they are to plants.
Is that weird or what? I mean, come on.
We share a lot of traits with fungi that we don't with plants.
For example, both fungi and humans are heterotrophs, so we can't make sugars through photosynthesis like the plants do. Instead, our bodies make digestive enzymes to break down and eat other organisms. Ha ha!
Also, mushrooms breathe in oxygen and out carbon dioxide just like we do. Plants do the opposite.
I know. It probably still seems weird, but it makes more sense when you zoom out in time. So plants branched out of the common evolutionary tree when they figured out how to make sugar out of sunlight, and that made them pretty special.
So as plants went on evolving using photosynthesis, our distant ancestors continued on being their slimy, moldy, other stuff-eating selves, and much, much later branched into fungi and animals, meaning our genetic codes are more similar.
But what about like the Venus flytrap, which has teeth and eats meat?
That's in a different show, Jefferson.
That's just more like physical traits that might make you think that they're more human. We're talking like in our genes here.
We do the tangents for you here and everything is interesting.
Cool.
Okay, but being so genetically related has its ups and downs, especially when it comes to human health. For instance, because we are related, fungal infections, which I think you said earlier, are incredibly difficult to mitigate.
I did?
Well, you said it's gross. Fungus.
I don't remember saying that gross, fungal infections are right? difficult to mitigate.
Maybe
that is
head,
gross.
Fungal infections are
gross.
You just
said it's
yeah.
gross. You said the gross thing.
They're difficult to mitigate because the medications that will attack the fungal cells will often also attack our own cells because of their genetic similarities.
On the flip side, being genetically similar means that we can harvest many medications from fungi, which is real handy in the fight against bacteria.
Yeah, you see, fungi naturally synthesize chemicals to protect themselves from the same bacterial pathogens that plague us.
Humans have been using mushrooms as medicine for thousands of years. The Greek physician Hippocrates, or Hippocrates, depending on what you're from, anyway, wrote about the anti-inflammatory properties of the amidal mushroom in 450 BCE, but there's evidence of this practice from almost every continent.
Modern-day mushroom treatments have been shown to boost the immune system, improve digestion, and fight cancer, among other things. You probably already know about penicillin. That's the drug that staves off potentially deadly strep throat and staph infection. Well, that's a fungal mold, people.
Yeah, and despite their genetic differences, plants and fungi are still intricately connected, right?
Yeah. Leads us to fungi fact number four.
You guys are on it. Fungi might be the reason we have land-dwelling plants at all.
It's thought that mycorrhizal fungi assisted plants coming onto land. It's a very ancient partnership. Fungi don't usually get preserved in the fossil record. They're pretty soft and pretty tiny. It's hard to see them. But there is some evidence of fossil fungi and fossil mycorrhizal plants. And it's thought that having a mycorrhizal partnership might be like the original condition for land plants.
So plants might have needed fungi to survive on land.
Yeah, we aren't totally sure yet, but it's very, very possible. And fungi are still helping land plants today.
Yeah, that soil-dwelling fungi, Arbuscular mycorrhizae, the one that helps trees communicate.
Oh, yeah, sure.
Yeah, it also helps plants in other ways. So they grow around and into the roots of the plant that hosts and feeds them. And then their mycelium extend out in many directions through the soil and increase the absorbent surface area of the plant root by like 1,000 times.
It's like having like 1,000 more mouths. I mean, think about how much more nutrient-rich liquids you could drink with 1,000 more mouths.
And the fungus also helps plants absorb phosphorus, which is something plants are not very efficient at getting themselves. It's a, you know, it's an electrolyte.
All right, let's move on to fungi fact number five.
I can't scroll that quickly.
That's right. And there's no sound effect. But without fungi,
guys. Mine.
Thank you. Without fungi, we'd be up to our necks in dead stuff.
Nice. It's a bonus. Boing, boing, boing. That's not what it sounds like at all.
Double.
It doesn't sound like boing. There's nothing about it that sounds like boing. It's the only sound I can think of. I can't do it. You guys go ahead.
Anyway, it's gross. Yeah, okay. So like mushrooms eating dead stuff is gross, but it's not as gross as dead stuff just lying around everywhere. So fungi do the essential work of freeing up nutrients from dead things, returning them to the ecosystem for use by living things.
For example, wood decomposing fungi are the only commonly distributed creatures that can decompose trees or dead trees. So Dr. Anne Rasmussen can help explain how that works.
So usually wood rotters are specialized. Fungi will have different sorts of enzymes to break down things and get nutrients out depending on what they grow on. So wood rotting fungi have some really specific enzymes that very few other organisms do that allow them to break down wood, which is, you know, a pretty tough natural material. Whereas a fungus that lives on your tomatoes or on vegetables or is decomposing animals, like wood and tomatoes and animals are all made out of different things. So they would have different tools to break them down and get the nutrients out of them.
Yeah, fungi can transform most any compostable ingredients into usable soil. And they do so like a super villain superhero. They spew acid all over the dead bodies of plants and animals and then suck up all the melted organic matter and acid stew.
It's disgusting and amazing at the same time. And they can degrade industrial waste products and chemical pollutants like herbicides and PCBs. And so the practice of what's called mycoremediation, or cleaning up contaminated sites with mushrooms, is starting to gain traction.
Which brings us to fungi fact number 6.
Mushrooms may be the answer to the plastic problem.
Very cool, guys. Plastic takes thousands of years to break down. It causes cancer, and it has a bad habit of, you know, killing sea creatures that try and eat it. And we make a lot of it.
But researchers in the Amazon jungle found a rare mushroom, I'm not going to try to pronounce it, which has an appetite for polyurethane, a main ingredient in plastic.
Think about that. This fungus wants to eat plastic. That is a big deal.
So these two...
Pestotiopsis microspora.
He did it!
Ta-da, Jefferson!
Yes. Give me another cup of coffee and I'll try to do that.
I hadn't said anything in a while.
So these two badass Australian designers, these two women, have developed this small, hollow, egg-shaped device they call a fungi mutarium.
These little cups, which are made of sugary seaweed derivative, are filled with old plastic and then inoculated with... Pestotiopsis.
Mm-hmm.
The fungus then eats both the cup and the plastic. And after a few months, you're just left with a puffy, delicious-looking fungus ball that you can also eat.
Which is so cool! So the plastic disappears, and then we get extra food. I mean, if you're into eating puffy fungus balls.
I want a plastic-eating fungus ball now!
And maybe you will get one someday, Jefferson. But guys, this product isn't in the grocery stores yet, but we are sure looking forward to it.
Yeah, so...
Don't start in grocery stores. Start at like a cool hipster restaurant.
Oh, totally.
Where
you're
you
right.
Tell the whole story of the fungus ball. Make it cool. Okay, keep going.
Pop-up fungus ball restaurant.
Yeah.
Do we have time to talk about skipping plastic? Yeah, so some people hope to use fungus to circumvent plastic entirely. So this designer, Eben Bayer, has developed a plan for growing mycelium around like whatever bio-waste material is regionally available. So like corn husks or cottonseed hulls to create completely biodegradable faux styrofoam packaging.
That can also, as a bonus, be buried in the ground to improve the quality of your soil. Again, thanks fungi. Everybody wins.
So...
That's it. Yeah. I think we might not have any more.
No, hold on. Jefferson says we got to talk about bees.
You got to do fun fact number 7.
Okay, fun fact number 7. Fungus is bee medicine.
Yeah. Bee populations, I'm sure you've noticed, have been steadily declining because of colony collapse disorder. And that's a really big deal because 1/3 of the food we eat is reliant on these little tiny pollinators.
I have a little concern, by the way, that you just said that they're declining because they're declining. Colony collapse disorder just saying that they're declining. I have a beef with that. I know it's not your fault. We'll do it in another episode. Keep going.
Well, no, but you bring up the point, which is that we don't know why colony collapse disorder is happening.
Well, it's because the bees are declining. Yeah, see, that's the problem. That's I'm illustrating the
okay,
point.
Okay, well, many theories link the loss of bees to the introduction of a certain parasitic mite with the ominous name of Varroa destructor.
These tiny but terrifying creatures drink bees' blood, and then they pass along viruses that cause deformities and death.
Blood drinkers and bearers of death, ha ha ha.
We are so evil today. The current chemical treatment for these mites can weaken or kill the bees.
But a few years ago, Paul Stamets, that godfather of all things mushrooms again, and entomologist Steve Shepard started testing the effects of reishi and amadou mushrooms on bee health and colony strength.
Their tests have so far been pretty inspiring. Spreading the spores of these fungi around the hive have shown great success in killing off the Varroa destructor mites without harming the bees.
Pretty cool stuff, huh?
Yeah.
How do you feel about mushrooms now, Jefferson?
I'm vastly more in favor. Of the things that cause me like micro stress, like when I cause microaggressions on myself, bee populations are one of them. It freaks me out.
Yeah.
It should. Bees are crucial to our survival.
Yeah. In a couple more years, it'll be giving you macro stress.
And I'm looking forward to the fungus ball.
Yeah. As you
and
should you be.
And you said that what's his face, Stannis from
Paul Stamets?
Yes, Paul Stannis from Game of Thrones. That fungus have brains.
Well, he didn't say that fungi have brains. He says that they're sentient. And so he has this whole bit about, like, when you walk over a mycelium mat, the mycelium knows that you're there, and it kind of sends up these little arms to pick up whatever debris your shoe left.
Can we coach it on eating the plastic faster?
Yeah, probably.
Just talk to it. Yeah. Hey, little mushroom, we really love you. Eat the plastic faster.
I mean, it works
faster.
For plants.
You're
so
cute. Thank
someday.
You
for the
so
bee
nice.
Stuff. Can we say thank you for the bee stuff, and they'll understand?
Oh, yeah.
I don't know.
Yeah, thanks.
You can try
the bee
it,
stuff, fungi.
Can't hurt.
Fungi's always listening.
Thanks, Jefferson, and thanks to the whole X-Ray crew for being here, and thanks to our listeners.
And an enormous thank you to Dr. Anne Rasmussen from Oregon State University for helping us learn so much about fungi.
We are so glad that all of you could join us today for this fun, fabulous journey through the forest of fungi.
I'm Kira Lindenberg.
And I'm Kira Klingenberg.
Be sure to tune in next week for another exciting episode of Everything is Interesting.